Good morning. Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Wednesday, February 23rd, 2022. The time is 9:12 a.m. I apologize for the late start. Ledge Council had at least three of our committee members obligated up till about 2 minutes ago. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and myself. We do anticipate Senator Stevens and Senator Machicki joining us shortly, but we do have a quorum to conduct business for the day. Thank you to Mary Gwen, our recording secretary, and Lydia, our moderator for today. As a reminder, please silence any cell phones you may have in the room. At this point, we're going to bring Senate Bill 174 back before the committee. It is related to dress codes and natural hairstyles. This is the second hearing of Senate Bill 174 in the 32nd legislature. And I will now open Senate Bill 174 to public testimony. Senate Bill 174 is now open for public testimony. Does anyone in the room wish to provide public testimony on Senate Bill 174? Seeing none, I'll look online really quick. And I see Brief at Ease. All right, Senate Education is back on the record. Sorry about that. Public testimony is still open, and I see online maybe Roslyn Grady White. And if you can hear me, please state your name, any affiliation, your location, and begin 2 to 3 minutes of public testimony.
Okay, so my name is Roslyn Grady White. My affiliation is I am the founder and vice president of the Alaska Coalition of BIPOC Educators. I am also a licensed hairstylist here in the state of Alaska. My branding name is Conceited Creations, and I'm calling out of Anchorage again, and thank you for having me.
All right, do you have any public testimony to offer?
Yes, I do. I do.
Please proceed.
I am in support of SB 174. I have been doing hair since high school. I graduated in 2003. I am the fourth generation hairstylist, which means that I'm following the footsteps of my late great grandmother, my late grandmother, and my awesome mother, who has been doing hair from what I know for more than 36 years of my life. I have seen all and been in all types of conversations where women, men, and children of color have been discriminated against because of their natural hair choices. I actually wish I was in front of you, but I am a paraeducator over here at Mountain View Elementary School. But I would like you to know that I actually wear locks myself, and I call them locks because I am not dreadful, nor do I dread anything I'm a part of. This bill is extremely important because it will allow people of color like me to be able to be their natural selves with style and class. When I was a child, my mother took care of my hair as much as she could because of all the horror stories we would hear about children going to school with their natural Afro looks. I have had to straighten little girls and or teenage mixed little girls' hair because, unlike my sister, who was called a loofah when she was a child because of her natural hair, they were not taught how to love their natural curls. And nobody wants to be called a loofah, which is like a sponge you wash with because your natural hair is out. As a black child, I have always been told I was supposed to look clean and well-kept. My natural hair made me look dangerous, or my braids made me look ghetto because of the colors I intertwined with them. I remember when I went to Abolute Christian School, I couldn't even wear colors in my hair because it wasn't a part of their dress code. Natural hair and natural styles are a part of my culture, and there is nothing wrong with it. I am happy to be nappy, and that is what I teach my clients and my children, and I appreciate, and I also teach them to appreciate and love who they are. So I am in support, once again, of this bill, and I would be glad if you are all in support as well, and thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak this morning.
Thank you, Roslyn, for that public testimony. Seeing no one else in the room and no one else online, at this point we'll close public testimony. Public testimony on Senate Bill 174 is now closed. I do see the sponsors in the room. I'll just ask, does anyone on the committee have any questions for the sponsor? Seeing none, we did receive one amendment from Senator Begich. Do you care to make a motion?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number, I guess it would be amendment number 132-LS1298-G.1.
Thank you for that clarification, Senator Begich. I'll object for discussion on amendment number one.
And if I may, then speak to the
Please
amendment.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment just simply follows similar language in other state laws that are like this law. When we reviewed the data and the information before us, we saw that there was some additional language in the Colorado law and some of the other states that included these other elements. It still maintains inclusivity, doesn't exhaust the definition, but just makes it just a little clearer what we're talking about here. That's it.
Thank you, Senator Begich. I will remove my objection. Is there any further objection to amendment number one? With no further objection, amendment number one is adopted. Is there further debate on this bill? With no further debate, I'll just state for the record that I do have general concerns about telling a business owner how to run their business. It seems that may be in this bill. I have no problem with the education-related sections of the bill, seeing as this is the Education Committee, and seeing as this bill does go to Labor and Commerce next, I'll trust the appropriate committee to address the policy concern, policy decisions affecting business owners. That being said, with no further discussion, Senator Stevens, can I look to you for the – oh, also, welcome, Senator Stevens, to the Education Committee. Can I look to you for the will of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that Senate Bill 174, Work Order 32-LS1298-G, as amended, be reported from the Senate Education Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
I will object for the moment to allow the – I forgot to let the Senate sponsor. Do you care to come back up and make any further statements? I withdraw my objection. With no further objection, Senate Bill 174 has been reported from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes, and we'll do a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Senate Education is back on the record. The next item on today's agenda is Senate Bill 34 relating to tribal compact schools. We'll now bring Senate Bill 34 back before the committee. This is the fifth hearing on Senate Bill 34 in the 32nd legislature. And our plan for today is just to dig into the committee substitute a little bit further, identify any recommended changes from stakeholders, and shine a light on any member concerns. At this point, we will hold public testimony on Senate Bill 34. I'll open public testimony. All right, public testimony is now open on Senate Bill 34. Does any member of the public in the room wish to offer public testimony? And I see, let me get over to the tab real quick. I believe I have Mr. Richard Peterson in the room. And Mr. Peterson, if you care to, first of all, it's great to see public testimony in person, and I'm glad that we're getting back to that in the Senate Capitol. But I will give you the mic. Please state your name and any affiliation, and offer 2 to 3 minutes of public testimony.
Geez, how are, is this on?
Yeah, get it kind of close.
Okay,
talk right into it.
How's that? All right. Well, thank you very much, Senator Stevens, Senator Holland, Education Committee. My name is Chakya Ish, Richard Peterson, and I currently serve as the president of Central Council of Klinkin Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. And I'd like to start off by acknowledging that we're on the Klinkin Ani, Akwan, and Taku Kwan people of these lands. Klinkin Haida is the largest tribe in Alaska with over 33,000 enrolled tribal citizens across the state of Alaska, nation, and world. Compacting is a government-to-government agreement to administer programs. Trust relationship repeatedly upheld by U.S. Supreme Court and the recognition of tribes' inherent authority to serve our citizens. Klinkin Haida already executes federal compacts with the Bureau of Indian Affairs on behalf of several communities in Southeast Alaska, administering sophisticated programs such as TANF, employment and training, child care, natural resources, economic development, as well as Head Start. Klinkin Haida is proud to have signed on to the historical Tribal Child Welfare Compact Agreement between the state of Alaska and tribes in 2017. Klinkin Haida already delivers early care and learning services through our Head Start programs, our Hayu Tungi, Cootie, Tlingit Language Immersion Nest. And while Head Start is not delivered through compacting, it's an education program we deliver in coordination with the state and federal governments. Tlingit Haida's Tlingit Language Immersion Nest is a demonstration of tribal governments have the ability to provide culturally relevant, place-based education through our indigenous languages. These are examples of how we might partner to deliver educational programming. The state of Alaska supports local control in many ways, including in education. Tribal compacting is the epitome of local control. Tribal compacting has the potential to enhance education delivery. As with so many other programs, it will depend on the details. Those details have everything to do with its potential for success. Alaska Native children comprise around 18% of Alaska's children. We owe it to our children and families to do all we can to enhance their educational opportunities. To partner with the state through compacting, we may be able to improve these children's educational outcomes. No one is more vested in the success of our students than we are. We stand ready to work with the state to design a system that allows us to work as partners and improve educational outcomes for our children. It's important to understand the ins and outs of compacting. This is something we're very familiar with, and it's important to build relationships on trust. Going to cheese Howa again for the opportunity to speak with you all today.
Thank you, President Peterson, for offering that public testimony. Thank you so much. At this time, I'll ask if there's anyone else in the room wanting to offer public testimony. Seeing none, I'll go online, look real quick, and I don't see anyone online wishing to offer public testimony. So at this point, I'll close public testimony. Public testimony is now closed on Senate Bill 34. We do have Tim Lampkin from Senator, Senator Stevens' staff available, and I'll invite him to the presenter's table to also help with any questions we may have. And we have representatives from the Alaska Federation of Natives online, and Joel Isaac, I believe, with from Deed with us online. We heard an introduction of the committee substitute during a last meeting, but it seems like there are a lot of questions still lingering, and we're going to have an opportunity to address some of these questions at this point. Does anyone on the committee have a question? Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you. I understand the way this works is that the commissioner of Deed would have an agreement with a tribal organization to set up a school, but I'm just wondering, I'm thinking of our SB 111, the reading bill, and the other things it does. How does it work when we put things in state law? Would that tribal school be obligated to follow that, or would that have to be specified in the agreement? And would we be able would it be necessary for us through statute to direct the commissioner to make sure that something like that is in the agreement? I'm just wondering how it works, because I know there's an independence and autonomy here, but there's certain things we want to make sure that happens, and if we're still providing public funds, we want to ensure that certain things are done. So I'm just wondering how that works, and so I better understand.
That might be a question for Mr. Isaac or Mr. Lampkin. Mr. Isaac, do you care to take a stab at it? And please state your name, put yourself on the record.
Janan Dukidley Takashnish, Chair Holland, Dene Ina Takayish Iji. My name is Joel Isaac, through the chair, Senator Holland. I'm in Kenai, Alaska, and to Senator Hughes, the way that the draft in front of you is written, would be able to address SB 111 and any future legislation if it addresses things like funding towards school districts. And that's one of, I would say, that the benefits of the way that the draft in front of you is written is that any future legislation that addresses LEAs, local education agencies, or school districts would be able to align with the way the statutes are currently written. So it wouldn't require explicitly stating this legislation has to be required by STECs, by state tribal schools to follow compacted schools, because they're set up as school districts. And so it creates a lot of simplification while still honoring the autonomy and flexibility that is needed in a compact. And it's not creating separate systems that have to be reconsidered each time legislation is passed. It allows it to work within the current structure, but allow for the compacting and that autonomy and negotiations to be navigated. I think the other piece that's important about this as well is the commissioner, if legislation on a federal level were also to come down, the commissioner doesn't have the authority to waive federal law. And so STECs would still, the compacting schools would still have to follow federal law because the state doesn't have the authority to waive federal law. So it's really a mechanism that creates a lot of functionality piece, a lot of simplification while still honoring the mechanism of compacting and the necessary negotiation process and autonomy that's established in compacting. So I hope that answers the question. I can do any follow-up that might be requested.
From Senator Hughes?
I thank you for your answer, but I am still confused. So I'm going to ask more specifically. If we are to pass legislation that requires schools to have a reading intervention program that is requires the phonics and different things in our bill, would a tribal compact school have to have a reading intervention program, or would the commissioner have to specify that in the agreement and the tribal organization would have to agree to it?
Through the chair, Senator.
Oh, no, it's fine. Go ahead, proceed.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, the compact school would have to follow that state law. So if they're going to accept the state funds for SB 111, they would have to meet those requirements of this example of having a reading specialist, and they'd have to follow the state law. The question about the compact be renegotiated? I think that's one of the pieces about when negotiations take place. And there's mechanisms that's part of negotiation. If there's a need to have one to address a new law that is enacted, that's part of the mechanism of compacting allows for that. And that's an example of how it acts in other arenas when there is a change to federal law or state law, that the negotiation can be had to address that. It would not. So I hope that answers the question of that.
Clarifications?
It actually begs another question. So it makes sense what you said about the reading intervention because there are going to be certain funds tied to that. But what about we have the school funding formula, the BSA, the money that is going out to all the districts. So the tribal organization would be receiving that. It's not necessarily tied to all these other things. Does it just mean in general the tribal compact would have to follow all the education statutes if they're taking the BSA for their students? Or are we only talking about when it's very program specific, like reading intervention, that they, if they took that reading intervention money, then they'd have to follow those statutes? What about, for instance, civics education is an example. So if that passes this body, would a tribal compact school, there's no money tied to that, would they have to meet that requirement in law?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, the short answer is yes. The longer answer is that, and kind of explaining the process for what that would look like. The standards that are articulated in state statute, the requirements for graduation, those kinds of statutory requirements that districts have to meet, STECs, the education compact schools would also have to meet, because those are, in general, they are tied to the obligation that if you're receiving the state funds, you are performing those services. So those are tied together, even though there's not specific funding for something like that civics piece or other standards. Mm-hmm. An example of how that contrasts to optional programs there are things like federal titles that if a school district qualifies for a certain kind of funding, they are not required to take it if it's optional. So if they do take a certain title funding, like on the federal side, they're agreeing to meet those requirements for that funding stream. But that's an example of certain federal funding streams are not mandatory. And so that's a contrast to show the difference between the state of Alaska, if they are passing a statute that requires a school district to do something for funding, the education compact schools would have to also follow that. If it's an optional funding stream, they have the choice on whether to engage in that funding stream or not. If they do choose to engage, they would have to follow the legal obligations for reporting, assessment standards, all those kinds of things at the state or federal level.
Thank you, Mr. Isaac. I believe Senator Stevens, did you have some input on this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the discussion so far, and I think the compacting issue is extremely important. I hope we can move forward with it, but I understand what Senator Hughes has said about this being confusing. It is confusing, and there are so many issues here that need to be dealt with. I will just bring up an issue that that could change things. I met with Dr. Larry Ledoux, former commissioner of education and now the superintendent of education in Kodiak, who is retiring shortly, and he said, why don't you just tie this to the charter school program, which we already have. We have we've been working on these little elements, trying to figure out how to add everything in here. It gets more and more complex when, in fact, there may be a way of tying this to the charter school programs that we already have. And I'd like to have Tim come forward, and maybe he can talk a little bit about that. It's an important issue, and I apologize. I mean, I wish this bill were ready and done and ready to go, but it is complex, and it's just not quite complete and not as thorough and not as perfect as it should be. So with your
Mr. Lamkin, please put yourself on the record and provide any input. One of the questions I had was, does the existing school charter school program, are there any problems with the existing charter school statutes that make state tribal compacting necessary? Is there some workaround? If you can offer just another thought on there, but please jump in.
For the record, Tim Lamkin, staff to Senator Stevens. I have reviewed the charter school statutes, not this morning, but I'm generally acquainted with them and feel that with some modifications, of course, it is something that is worth considering under this program.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Lamkin. Senator Begich.
Thank you.
I would also like to welcome Senator President, Senator Michiki to the committee this morning. Thanks for showing up. I know you had led counsel before this. Senator Begich, sorry to interrupt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, it's all right. Senator Stevens gets to the heart of where I'm coming from with a series of questions that I would have asked. Because what I don't see addressed, and maybe you could explain to me, Mr. Lampkin, where these might be, but what I don't see addressed are the issues of election of school boards. Potentially this bill could create over 200 individual, what have been described now by Mr. Isaacs, as school boards. And our laws are clear that school boards have a process and that there is an elections process for that that determines how we administer these school boards. I don't see that addressed here. I don't see protections.
Senator Beck, you mean school boards or school districts?
School boards. Okay. For electing school boards for these potential districts. It doesn't explain what the responsibility, let's say Mr. Peterson described the Tlingit Immersion Program here, which is quite successful within the Juneau School District. Do those teachers that then, let's say there's a compact written with Tlingit Haida here, does that come out of the jurisdiction of the existing school board now, which I would guess it would? And so then who do the parents have as an elected body to represent them? Is it the tribe alone? Is it limited to only tribal members? These are questions that I don't see addressed in the bill that perhaps the charter school element could address. The question of employee rights, collective bargaining or retirement or things like that. I don't see these things addressed here in the simplicity of the bill, but I think the charter school, I'm glad you brought that up, Senator Stevens, that hadn't really been on my radar that that might be a solution here, given what Joel Isaacs just said about the state law applying for any compact that would be negotiated between the commissioner and a tribe. It would seem to me, if state law applies, that we might be going through a process of creating more than we need to create. And so I'm just wondering on those questions on the issue of elections, on the issue of our protections on collective bargaining, on our issue of parental representation, is there anything in the CS? I didn't see it, but is there? Am I missing something there?
Tim Lampkin, Staff Senator Stevens. Those provisions are silent in the bill, as you've noted. The movement toward the idea of a charter school system, as I would venture to say that charter school programs are more generally and more broadly understood and embraced, and could quite probably address a lot of the things and questions that are sort of floating out there.
So follow up,
Senator Begich.
Is there anything in the current law then, if what Mr. Isaacs, Director Isaacs had said, and from what you just said, is there anything in current law now that would prohibit us from moving forward with a more robust system of charter schools addressing tribal language, tribal immersion? Is there anything in current law that would prohibit us from moving forward now?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, not that I'm immediately aware of, no. We could, I think, theoretically here, essentially copy the existing charter schools, rename a new program under perhaps this 1416 and call it State Tribal Education Charter Compact Schools. Just add the word charter in there, and that would, I think, perhaps help bring a better understanding of what the goal is here. I'd also, at least for purposes of school board, the theory here is charter school, existing law would have charter schools go to their local school board. In this instance, it perhaps would be more appropriate for compacting charter schools to go directly to the state board of education, perhaps. It's just an idea. But as regards, you know, this is kind of really all orbiting around local control is sort of the heart of this matter and their autonomy, whereas we have certain checks and balances, accountability measures, and local control. And so with that, I guess I think it indulges the chair and the committee at this time to defer to AFN.
Ms. President Kitka, have you been able to tune in? Did you want to provide some input on this?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I like the direction that Senator Stevens and his staff, Tim, is going on looking at another version of this along the line of the charter thing on that. When we analyzed this on the state level of doing a demonstration project, we were really torn on whether or not there was existing authority in law to do it anyway. And we didn't feel that there was a lot that needed to be done in order to authorize this. This is, again, not a wholesale redoing of education. It's just an authorization of a demonstration to test something out. And then we're trying to graft on hopefully some new federal support, financial and other things, such as on teacher preparation, on curriculum development and things like that. So kind of a hybrid type thing. So we weren't convinced that there needed to be a huge effort in state law changes. So I think just an affirmative authorization to go forward, and where you place it, if you put it in the charter school stuff, I think that's fine. We'll work with you on that. But I think we just needed the affirmative thing that this committee and the legislator wanted to explore the innovation of compacting, wanted to authorize a demonstration, and then revisit it. We felt that if there was conflicts that came up, that you'd have a resolution process in the compact if it needed to be, we viewed this as a real cooperative effort between the tribal organizations and the state. We didn't look at this as adversarial, what would be in the compact if we ran up into something new, all of a sudden we'd go to litigation or whatever. This is working it through, and how do you build in more innovation and more local control and test this out? That's how we viewed it. So I'm kind of intrigued with the new direction on the charter school. So thank you.
Thank you, President Kitka. If you'd just state your affiliation and place yourself on the record real quick.
Yeah, name is Julie Kitka. I serve as the president of the Alaska Federation of Natives.
Thank you so much. I'm going to invite my education committee staff, Ed King. I think he has some input, maybe to offer some insight on this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ed King, staff, Senator Hahn. As the committee discusses this issue with the charter school, Mr. Chairman, I just point out that the charter school programs allow for the waiver of local laws and explicitly allows for the waiver of curriculum and day and session requirements. There is no authority under the charter programs to waive any other state laws. And so it might be worth the committee's time to identify any issues in state laws that aren't allowed by charter school that the proponents of the effort are looking to engage in. Otherwise, it is potentially very feasible to just provide explicit authority to the charter school program and meet this intent. But if there are other state laws that need to be waived that aren't waived in the charter school system, those need to be called out specifically.
Senator Stevens, I knew you had some input on this.
I just wanted to respond to Senator Begich's comments. I really appreciate the discussion so far. It's been extremely valuable. And first, we really support the compacting, and we really support charter schools. They're all moving ahead fine. I think that the charter schools does program, that approach does answer some of the questions Senator Begich brought up, like the whole issue of employees and school boards. And this would not, if we went through charter schools, it would not create new school boards. We could use the old school boards or even approach, look at going through the state school board, which might be a little more problematic, a lot more work for the school board, the state school board to do. But in any event, I think this discussion is really important. And I appreciate you giving us the latitude. We should be farther ahead at this point. We're not. We just need to develop this in the right way because I think it's really important that we let our tribal communities know that we're trying to solve this problem, and maybe backpacking it onto the charter schools is a reasonable way to do it.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just would say, based again on President Kitka's comments and comments of Senator Stevens, it seems to me, and of Mr. King's, it seems to me that it's a little different than a charter school, but the charter school gives the template. That there's what we're talking about is maybe, as Mr. King suggested, looking at that charter school law and saying, working with AFN to do that and others, but to identify what are the things that might be barriers to the learning experience that's been described, what might be those things, and how, and really creating that hybrid. And I think, you know, going back again to President Kitka's comments about this is a demonstration project, not a wholesale change of system, because if it works, then it could lead to substantial change in system, just as the charter school program did as it began to expand. So perhaps the answer here is the deep dive around what might, as Mr. King identified, what might or might not need to change in the charter school law to do this, and maybe it's a separate title that talks, as you suggested, Mr. Lampkin, a tribal charter school, separate, you know, title. So I don't know, but that seems to me like the best approach, and I haven't actually dug deep enough yet, but that seems to me an approach that I would want to follow.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you for the discussion. Thank you for bringing it up. Not creating 200 school districts sounds like a pretty good reason to explore this. And one of the things I would request, Mr. Chair, I'm somewhat familiar with charter schools. There are some in my area, and they all engage parents, big parental involvement's a big thing. And so I guess part of it is I don't fully understand our statutes regarding charter schools, so my request would maybe be that we maybe have a little presentation on what a charter school, how it works. And I'm thinking the charter schools have their own boards, parental boards that are on them. So you'd have your local school board, but the charter school would have its own school board. And then the one question I have, and I don't know if maybe Tim has an answer, is part of the whole concept was to allow the autonomy and to structure it So it's it would work best for the students, but it's also to pull down federal funds for them to allow to leverage federal funds. Do you know if our charter laws, would we need to fix that part, or would they be able to bring down leverage funds as a tribal organization under the charter statutes?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, nothing precludes federal funds to pass through local school boards to charter schools. Not having worked directly with charter schools, I'm not aware of an inhibition from them to get direct federal grants at this time. No.
I'll bring Ed King back to the table. He has some input on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ed King for the record again. Mr. Chairman, I had this same thought and actually reached out to the Bureau of Indian Education to ask this question regarding specifically on Title VI schools. I have a meeting with them on Friday and can report more to the committee at that time, but the question has been asked.
Okay. Thank you. And so it kind of seems like we're getting deeper into this, and now my question originally would have been just on a slightly different topic, and maybe we can have some input from President Kitka or Mr. Isaac or Mr. Lampkin as far as, so tribal compacting, would we anticipate fully certificated teachers in Alaska? And do we even know, do charter schools require fully certificated teachers in Alaska? And that might be a driver for going one way or the other.
Through the chairs, or Mr. Chairman, charter school teachers they are public schools, and so therefore they are subject to certification process licensing through the state. Whether or not we include that in this compacting bill is currently silent on that matter.
Thank you.
Sure.
Senator Stevens.
I think the suggestion that we bring the department in is valuable to learn more about charter schools and actually have the department address this issue of tribal compacting in the charter school system. I'm not sure this is the answer that we want. We want to make sure it works out just the way it should, but I believe that should be the next step to bring the department in.
Thank you. I also see President Kitka. You may have your hand up, or is that do you have some comments to offer? Please put yourself on the record.
We would be glad to do a paper for you that compares and contrasts charter versus a compact school in our mind. What I think is missing so far in the conversation is the whole thing of transformative education and innovation. What is going to drive that? So we have been partnering with First Alaskans Institute, doing a number of webinars on that. Our last one that we held was on Friday, and we had 1,400 people online participating and listening and comments on that. And it was really instructive what was on people's minds. What was on people's mind was we need to remind parents that they're the first teachers of their children. We must make sure that parents.
You have frozen, Julie.
Anyone of the all the people participating.
If you
that was negative. So I think that. Oh, pardon?
Yeah, if you could, you broke up a little bit. I think the last thing we might have heard clearly was we need to ensure parents, but maybe like the last two or three sentences you might have had.
Yes. Well, what came out in the webinars that we had, again, it was a partnership with First Alaskans, and they did it, and it was run Facebook Live, and we can send the committee the links to the three ones so people can watch it or the transcript on that. But what was interesting was people wanting to talk about we need to remind parents that they're the first educators of their children and keep them in the loop on this and support that. But it was very strong in support of these demonstration projects on compacting. They felt that was a way for this to go forward. Again, it wasn't structured just pro and con on compact. It was, what is transformative education? How do you drive innovation? How do you get the support of the families and the communities behind education? And I think we're seeing a real hunger for people wanting to see this go forward and have this opportunity. So for the committee, I think a focus on what innovation that's going on right now in the state and what exactly is transformative education could help inform this too. So again, what we were seeking from the legislature was just clarity on going forward with the demonstration project. We didn't, again, think it needed to do a wholesale reshuffle of anything. It was just explicit authority, go forward and test this out. So thank you.
And once again, that was Julie Kitka, President of AFN. And Ken, can we dot that I and cross that T? Can we get your location?
Anchorage, Alaska.
Thank you so much. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we all have the same goal here, and the transformative issue is extremely important. I'd appreciate it if President Kitka could do an analysis of it. You talked about a paper that might compare compact schools to charter schools and further might look at what changes might be needed in the charter school. We'll ask the same question of the Commissioner of Education when we get him here. I think we're moving in the right direction, and there might be a resolution to this that is better than we ever thought.
Are there any other questions from the committee at this time? Seeing none, thank you all for the great discussion today. It looks like we're going to be setting up another meeting to discuss charter versus compacting and pros and cons benefits. We'll try to get the Department of Education in on that as well. And with no other questions from the committee, at this time I'll set Senate Bill 34 aside while we continue working on the bill. Is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, our next meeting will be Friday, February 25th at 9 a.m. And today we're adjourned at 9:56 a.m.